Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Live Stack Podcast. In today's episode, we will discuss machine learning in food animal agriculture, an old tool with new applications on farm, and how farmers are the domain experts at the center of its successful deployment. I'm Daniel Foy, the co-founder and CEO of Aggregates. Joining me is Marcel Alsdorf, Senior Cloud Solutions Architect at Microsoft. He is a data engineer, cloud architect, sales engineer, author, university lecturer, and has an interest in a variety of topics that include software and hardware use cases. Thanks, Marcel. Why don't you go ahead and give a short introduction of yourself and what you do day to day?
Sure. My name is Marcel Alsdorf. I work at Microsoft as a cloud solution architect, as it is called. So generally what I'm doing is I'm working with a lot of different types of customers from small to big scale and trying to bring them or bring their infrastructure and their ideas to a cloud environment. And so basically I'm building with them architecture or solutions for their different types of use cases in the cloud.
You also have a bit more of a colorful history with technology. You've worked in hackathons, CERN. You want to talk about that a bit?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so before my work here as an architect with Microsoft, I've been to a lot of different places. I worked at CERN to build basically hardware, so something completely different in a sense, for the Large Hadron Collider at CERN. So this is, of course, scenarios, but you see again a certain pattern. You try to find solutions for problems. So you have a scenario where you want to avoid the machine exploding, in a sense. So you need to have hardware that react very fast to basically stabilize the machine. And that is what I was working on at CERN. In between, I worked as a software engineer to actually see a little bit more of the front-facing applications that people use and how this actually works then, of course, in a real company compared to you're studying simply about this. Yeah, and otherwise, in a bunch of these roles, I visited a lot of different places. So this role where I basically built apps, I was on the other side of the world for me, which is the Fiji Islands. And the other role, of course, I had the nice environment in Switzerland to enjoy Switzerland. And then, of course, working on a very interesting research project, which is CERN and the colliders there.
Now you get to be in sunny Ireland all the time.
Exactly. So I switched the sun and humid island to the cold and humid island. But it's actually sunny. The people always think about Ireland as very rainy, but it's actually where I'm coming from, which is Germany, it's actually raining more than here because everything moves very fast. So I'm quite fine with the weather, except for maybe summer where it's not getting that hot. But yeah.
Terry, my colleague, and I have been reading your book, Mastering Azure Machine Learning, by yourself and Christopher Croner. What really caught my attention and what we've talked about before is stacks. And how do we start that for what we're ultimately trying to do in the problem we have in agriculture? But it seems to be the same process with really any sector who's going to develop a data ecosystem or data system that they can use for machine learning. I guess, your experience working on various different projects and sectors, talk about the different kind of stacks and use cases of things like platform as a service, infrastructure as a service, SaaS as a service, and then on-prem systems. I think that's probably a good starting point in kind of understanding what do we need to do before we get to intelligence, right?
Yeah, the nice thing about my job, because I concentrate a lot in the cloud on how to process data, and you mentioned my book where I went a little bit more into kind of the last step that a lot of people try to get to, but might not get to easily, is then actually learn from data that you have. But obviously, if you want to learn from data, and there's the typical saying, machine learning, garbage in, garbage out. Yep. If you want to learn from data, you kind of have to figure out, where's my data? What is all of this information? How do I classify all of this? And what is actually important, if you can think about machine learning, to train a model and to get to something that learns from your data? It's very important to think about how to structure what you have. And if you look at cloud infrastructure, Azure, like you have it in Microsoft for the Azure platform and in other companies. You mentioned, yeah, we have platform as a service, infrastructure as a service, and software as a service, as a lot of people know. You have to think, what technology would you use? And from all the discussions I had with a lot of different companies, you have to, what I can tell everyone, you have to define use cases. And typically, a lot of people come from the technology, in a sense, and say like, oh, we need now this data warehouse, or we need now IoT something. But in general, it's more about, and this is the approach then where I pivot them typically, is to understand what is the use case? What is the user that is actually in the end should use whatever you're building here, and what is the goal behind it later on? And from these discussions, you can actually find good solutions that are either already existing, like you people maybe about systems like Databricks, like systems that you have specifically as a platform service on cloud services like Microsoft and other things, where you say, oh, this is a good use case for this technology. We should have this in the flow of data processing. But eventually, what you want to figure out is, what is my sources of data? Can I bring them together in a relatively fluid format, in a sense, where a lot of different systems can attach to it? So people typically talk about something like data lake in these kinds of scenarios, but a lot of people understand different things with this term. So in general, I would just tell you, you want to have kind of a storage in some place where with a certain logic on top of it, where you get to bring your data together. Because a lot of systems, especially machine learning and these other things, they need relatively file-based structures, in a sense, if we talk technical requirements, to actually be very efficient. And from that point on, it's really about how do you serve the data, in a sense of what kind of applications are behind it. Is this, do you have latency requirements that you react very fast? So you might have alerting. And this then goes into scenarios like IoT or anything that is kind of event-driven. And on the other spectrum, you might have something like, oh, I just want to have these millions of information, and I just want to do some data science on it, and figure out connections between informations. But nothing flows in that scenario. So you just have to have something that is very good at processing a lot of data. So, and this is kind of, when you try to classify use cases, it's kind of between, you want to be very low latency, very fast with something and react, in a sense, up to you kind of want to just not wait for 5 days for a process to finish and telling you some kind of answer, but you want to wait maybe 2 hours. And so you use different systems that help to alleviate that pain, in a sense. But that is a little bit the spectrum of data.
There are systems and structures for insights and intelligence that are already off the shelf that can be then applied to those systems, right? Like you said, depending on the degree that's there of what you go for, you can take down specific machine learning components in, Azure is offering them, and it goes through in the book those, but there are other sources of them. And then there's the flexibility of actually developing and training new models within these infrastructures once you have those specific infrastructure in place for the data and where the data is going and coming from, right?
Yeah, so if you go into, let's say, the era of machine learning, as you saw in the book then as well, the first question you should ask you always is, do you actually need machine learning to solve a problem? Because machine learning is a complicated, or can be a complicated beast depending. And sometimes it's just, you need something, because machine learning is, we're doing machine learning because we are not able to write code for it. Yeah. So normally you get an input and an output, and the thing in between that processes your data and does a certain task, we are just not able to do it. If you say like, oh, I want to figure out that this picture, or this picture is a dog, or this picture is a cat, you then might be able to figure something out, because for us, it's a picture, because our brain is very special in a sense, but computer in itself, for him, it's just some pixels, and some pixels with numbers. So in the end, it's a lot of numbers, and you have to figure out, if you would write your code yourself, how do I interpret it suddenly that this is a dog? And this is the kind of scenarios where, first of all, figure out if you need machine learning, because sometimes it's just data science, in a sense, or basically statistics, which is the base of it all.
On that point, in terms of, do you need machine learning? Is there a component in there, you kind of caught my attention on the fact that data quality, and not having good data quality, could lead to not interpreting the data accurately and then leading to machine learning, which then exacerbates a problem, right?
Yes, I mean, exactly. Besides, let's say, using something which is worthwhile investing in machine learning in, let's say like that, is the other point of having actually clean data that is actually correct. Yeah. So if you were to say, oh, I, for example, would want to have predictive maintenance on my machines, or a predictive quality or something like that, which is kind of a custom thing because it might depend on a very specific system you have and things like that. Yeah, is this robot arm, is it basically breaking after 5,000 turns or something like that? So what you then, of course, try to do, and what you try the machine to figure out, is here's all my historical data. Figure out when this is breaking. So certainly to find out predictive maintenance, you actually have to have records of what happened before and when it breaks. So oftentimes you might want to have historical data of 2 years or something that are very precise. And you have to figure out what is my error on these. So because of everything that you measure, you will introduce an error. And this is what you learn in physics and in other places. Nothing is precise in reality. And that is one level. And then the other thing is, did I actually record all of this, or did I not record this? Yeah. And, or maybe I'm actually figuring out through training and analyzing the data that what I actually need is missing, which is unfortunate. So, and this is a little bit the crux if you start to do custom machine learning and basically starting from I have data. But in general, yes, your data should be of very high quality, or you should be able to get it somewhere. Yeah. If, for example, if you figure out, oh, this data I got from my machinery on the field or something like that, that's fine. But I kind of need the weather data as well, because there's an influence of rain or storm or something like that. So, of course, these kinds of data you can actually get, even very precise. And that is, of course, where except you want to do it, but you shouldn't invest too much in very generic data sets that you actually can get that are precise for your location and other scenarios. But yeah.
I often hear that with crops and sound envious. You know, they make it sound so easy because they have the weather, they can get soil samplings, tests, etc. And it's very stand in place. And I often think we're a plane in a boat in a car moving with livestock, because we've got this kind of living organism that's even more complex than just, let's say, a crop in a field. It's moving, and that's another huge variable in this situation to try and capture and calculate.
Exactly. So there's a lot of things. You might also not, the problem also, of course, what we are doing, we are training the machine. At the same time, we have a certain goal. And there's a lot of aspects on, and I allude to that in the book as well, of you might actually bring your own biases into the data. Yeah. You might, and this is, there are worse, really bad biases where it's like, you actually don't understand that you're doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we have a certain intrinsic, or your goal is to figure this out and train this model. Maybe you are actually lean to something that is not very good. Yeah.
And that reading about false positive, false negatives, it felt very, taking back to my scientific roots in terms of analyzing information, and especially from, let's say, surveys in nutrition diet diaries, a lot of it you had to look at, am I leading the person to the answer that I want from the question? And then how does that affect what data quality I'm ultimately going to get back from these individuals?
It's the interesting thing is also statistics is very unintuitive. It's interesting from my I love math for a long. I really like mathematics, and I've done a lot of different studies in general that somehow relates to mathematics or pure mathematics in a sense. Every time I come around statistics, you're talking about a very fun statistical problem where everyone is very confused. And I'm very confused because, I mean, the simplest thing is, the first time I was confused in this area is, you have 30 people in a room. I think it's something like 50 or 60% chance that two people have the same birthday. And you're like, this makes no sense, but it's correct. It is correct. Yeah, but our mind cannot process this idea. And this is what statistics is very confusing. Yeah. And unfortunately, machine learning is pure statistics. In a sense, like people might say, there's, of course, the algorithms that you use to then train something. But it's all based on very clean data that you want to have as clean as possible, and how you actually analyzed it before with statistics. And sometimes, if you're really good at this, and so it's good to have people that have have looked through millions of data sets, in a sense, to understand patterns and see patterns, because we are having a hard time seeing that. This is basically what the machine does.
Yes.
The machine is just learning patterns. And if you're really unfortunate, it learns the pattern of how everything looks in your data set. Yeah. So then it's perfect for your data set, and it's horrible for anything else that you throw it in or throw at it. And it's a lot of trial and error and a lot of figuring it out. And the last part is machine learning is never 100%.
Yes.
So, you see it with maybe environments that happen now with AI and other areas, that you cannot really use these kinds of systems for the truth, in a sense, the ultimate truth. Yeah, this is the answer. Oh, I'm asking this is the answer. Yeah, and that is, let's say, the problem you will get with machine learning. So you have to understand, I might have to have other systems afterwards. If the machine learning algorithm says, oh, I'm very unsure about this, that you have to prove things. But getting back to your initial questions, you will find on platforms like Azure and others, you will find ready-made machine learning solutions that are typically for problems that are very general. Yeah? So like voice recognition. You might have specific things like dialects. You might hear my dialect. In a sense, or my hard pronunciation of English words. But it's not that hard to get this delta problem solved. Yeah, we're still speaking the same language, in a sense. And so it's quite easy to make a general model for a language X. And this is good, and you should use this, because it makes no sense to build these kinds of things.
Yeah.
But if you have something very specific, like, oh, I have these specific machineries, I have these specific things, and for you as well in the agriculture, you're moving livestock and these kinds of things, and you might have very specific things. So you will not find the general model for that. You might find a general model to do document, whatever, pulling out, let's say, the things written on a document and then processing that you will find generically. And you should use these kinds of solutions. But yeah, for other things, you want to have a custom solution.
You mentioned something really interesting about time. I looked at your percentage of time allocation to machine learning project tasks. And it kind of breaks down data identification, 5%, data aggregation, 10%, data cleaning, 25%, and then goes into data labeling, data augmentation, ML, algorithms, etc. It kind of caught me, the fact that there's only 10% on data aggregation for a machine learning project. And I speak to, and I've other guests on this show who have said, you know, a lot of the time is in those early sections on what we do in food animal agriculture. And back to my very first question, almost on how do you choose what data kind of infrastructure you put in place to ultimately reduce and manage those time components, to streamline working with ML to answer our questions and problems. I guess what kind of like experience or use cases have you seen at kind of honing in infrastructure to allow that machine learning time allocation to emerge, if that makes sense?
Yes. So as I said, we need data quality. And what you want to do is, of course, you want to find easy ways to, first of all, get the data that you want to cover. Yeah. So you might have sensors somewhere, you might have certain systems that can just get you a bunch of data. And it's fine, just get all the data. And this is, let's say, the first step in all of the projects I have, even if they have nothing at this moment, in a sense, they might have machinery and these kinds of things. You figure out, hey, what kind of information can I actually get from this machine? Maybe you have a good inkling of, okay, maybe I need these and these sensors, because probably I wouldn't want to do something with this information or this data. So you might install a couple of more sensors where you say,
your weather analogy. Let's use your weather analogy. If we've got NOAA weather and we now want to understand cow behavior, right? We need to merge those two things together.
Exactly.
To know a rainy day causes cows to lie less, let's say.
So you might have the movement of cows as a sensor data. I wonder how you get this exactly, but probably on a collar or something like that. Yeah. And then on the other hand, you might have a weather station yourself. You might have a general, very precise weather data that you can get from somewhere else. Both of them should be getting to one place, typically, as I said, a data lake or something like that. And it's relatively easy to funnel that, first of all, because you're not doing, actually, you don't have crazy requirements of latency and these kinds kinds of things. You know, for the first step, it's just funneling the data. And that is what this 10% would be. Yeah. You just get data from A to B, and B is one place for all the data. Yeah. You have to think about the structure, and maybe you do folder structures like months, days, and these kinds of things. Yeah. And then someone can pick this up and start playing with this. And I'm also not doing machine learning all day because, as I said, I'm talking about architecture. So in the course of this book, I suddenly was faced with, oh, here's a data set. So I want to explain someone, what would you actually start doing? And if you do this the first time, it will take a lot of time because you're starting, of course, figuring out what can you take apart, what kind of statistics can you apply to this, and then start to maybe find correlations. This is typically a step that you would do, yeah, and these kinds of things. And there you might have some hints, yeah, if you have a data set, and with the example we're just talking about, you might know that if it's a storm outside, the cows will move back to the barn, yeah, or something like that. So you would expect this to find, yeah, and then of course you're looking for this and see if this is basically shown in the data, yeah. And these are the kinds of things you do first, and then you can start trying to play with some models, yeah, because in the end you want to have, of course, kind of a target that is typically called a machine learning, yeah, where it's like, actually I want to have this value, yeah. So in predictive maintenance, it would be you have to send a mechanic, yes or no. Yeah. Or in other scenarios, you will have an actual value of what is this house price or something like that. Yeah. With all of these ingredients. But this you have to figure out, of course, where do we want to go? And then you might declare one of the features, as they call it, which is basically, if you think about the table, it's basically the columns. Yeah, are the features. So, but you should know, people like new fancy words for obvious things. So it's in the end, you have a table with a lot of data. You will say some of them imply the other, or yeah, have kind of a grip on the value of the others. And then you say, okay, this is my target, and these are my features, in a sense. And then you say, okay, this let's try to figure out if there's some truth to this, some connection between them. This is kind of the way. And then it's getting complicated, let's say it like that. Because then eventually you will train something, you will figure this out. And what you really want to do is, of course, because it's nice that you can predict something, in a sense, or things like that. But actually, you want to predict it, of course, exactly when it happens. Yeah. And this is where we come into a different structure, as I mentioned before, where you have more of an event system where you're actually feeding them live. And this is where you have to see how to set this up. You have to feeding them live the data. And then you basically have the trained model, which is just an algorithm. It's, as I said, also a fancy word for, it's basically a computer written algorithm that we didn't write, yeah, where it just gets the inputs and it will tell you yes or no or whatever target you had. And then on that, you will action it. And you'll say, oh, if this is whatever, over 3 or something, someone has to look at this. Someone has to go to the cow and check if everything is all right. Yeah, and these kinds of things. But that is kind of what it goes hand in hand. You will work on historical data and funnel this, and this is typically easy. The complicated part is, as you saw in the long list of things to do, is then actually the data science or the statistics on this. And then eventually deploying a model and things like that is, once again, the simple part, because you did the complicated part, and then you just use systems like Azure Machine Learning and others platform have similar systems where you then say like, oh yeah, but I want to make, let's say, the management of all of this simpler, because what I described to you, you could do in a lab. Yeah. It's that easy. You might want to have something because you might make millions of runs of training. Yeah. So it's maybe good to have a server somewhere like in the cloud where you can just deploy this. But in the end, the cloud and all of these things are just giving you, especially or primarily, very easily management, yeah, that you don't have to handle everything by hand and push everything here, but it's automatically, you set it up on both ends, it automatically sends data, then you would say, oh, maybe I'm retraining this automatically with new data, yeah, from my historical data so far, and then you retrain it with new data, and then it automatically updates my machine learning model that is just sitting in the event stream, and the events or the information that comes in from your farm then is just pushing through through that. Yeah? You might have multiple versions and these kinds of things. So all these shenanigans you get then with the cloud and with management, in a sense.
How does, you know, from your experience in other sectors and use cases, you know, when you come in and you're trying to apply this onto a sector that is in its infancy in digital adoption and is trying to move in this into this area, how do you train, let's say, or prepare the farm and their skills as the business, but also then, are we talking about a new type of role emerging that helps the farm pick and choose through the models and the statistics to best get the outcomes from their data? I guess, what is the kind of base knowledge and skills training we want? I often say we need civil data scientists at the farm level, or citizen data computer scientists too at the farm level. But we also then need a component probably between ourselves at Aggregates and someone like Azure and Microsoft, who's then working specifically with the farm on defining models and statistics, etc.
So you came to the correct question, in a sense, that who is doing this? Yeah, I told you that I was sitting there. Of course, I wanted to explain things, so it took me much more time to understand it and then explain it properly. Still, I'm not, you know, there's people that do this all the time, all day long. They look at data, and you will want to have a person like that, first of all. So, but not sure if I ever described that in the book, but in the end, you kind of want someone who understands the subject. Yeah. So typically called a subject matter expert who understands farming. Yeah. The domain knowledge. What is happening? I have other customers where it's like, oh, we have, of course, an oven to melt metal, yeah, and to purify copper or something like that. And you have sudden 15 different chemical processes that are happening. So the guy that his life is about looking at numbers and figuring statistical anomalies has no idea about an oven that melts copper. Yeah, and he will not have, of course, the knowledge of how to run a farm. Yeah? He might have an interest, but he's not having the knowledge. So the second you start, especially with machine learning and these kinds of things, you suddenly need a whole bunch of people that work together.
Yeah.
So you need someone figuring out the statistics. So you typically take a data science. You probably want to have someone either, as I said, yourself, or you have help from, for example, Microsoft or me in specifically, that knows data engineering. Yeah? So how actually should the platform work? Yeah? This is more about how do I get things from A to B? How is it formatted so that a data scientist can just say, import this file? Yeah, and that's all. Yeah, and he's in his world. Yeah, and the third person is then typically the subject matter expert, the one with the domain knowledge, where the data scientist then comes to and says, hey, I've seen some interesting correlations between these and these and these things. Can you get me a little bit more information about how processes are working? And if you have a feeling this has actually impact, or this is something that you would expect or not expect, or things like that. And kind of like that. And of course, typically you might have someone doing the project management or something like that. But when it comes to the technical base, this is typically the three people that you need. Sometimes they might come, if you're really lucky, in two, and you might only need two people, yeah, and things like that. But it's better to work in a team, in a sense, to get the best guys for data crunching, data engineering, and these kinds of things together. I might have missed anything you said, but...
I think that hits onto it. And I think, you know, breaking down the silos we currently have in where the data resides right now, we need more of those trifecta of individuals working in collaboration with farms to better facilitate their needs with the data. We're doing too much of trying to apply the proverbial cookie cutter solution to each farm, but we've got a little more learning and training to do about each of the individual sites that we're working with. Imagine, like you just said, this engineer who's working in a copper factory is working across 12 different, 15 different chemical reactions that are happening to make one product, and is separate from the domain expertise. Well, we need to understand what is it we need to gather all the different information from, what quality that is, and then empower that person to be able to assist us. But we've kind of not put the appropriate infrastructure in place yet to allow that. I think a multiplier effect, because each site is individual, through the technologies we'll deploy. A lot of them will be just probably off the shelf, like you said, audio file, README type machine learning components. But there'll be other ones that will be developed that are unique to livestock agriculture and the breadth of different farms that we've got in there.
We talked a lot about, let's say, in the cloud. And the cloud is very, very straightforward in some regards. eventually you will get data, and then there's clear solutions or ways to use this for certain use cases, like machine learning, or you have, as I said, you have historical data that you will use differently or handle differently than you have an event stream that's coming. The question is, how is this coming in? And then you're suddenly on the hardware side, on the farm. And let's say the suggestion I can make is, if you have a lot of, let's say, heterogeneous solutions, of course, on-premise or on the farm itself, there might be a way to just have the complexity there shielded by a gateway, in a sense, that handles standards, and you have to say, okay, we follow a certain standard how we send information. Yeah? And you have to think about formatting and so on. But you will say, okay, we can do a very homogeneous solution. We have a certain standard, and then you have specific interfaces. And eventually you have to have translations between interfaces and your standard. But to make this, let's say, on a grand scale, you need to, that's maybe also a suggestion in general, and it applies to a lot of things. Yeah, sometimes, of course, someone will come to you and say, okay, this is my standard, I would not change it. But sometimes it's worthwhile to say, I have a very good thing and a very good system. This is my standard. Please adapt to this. Yeah. And you will come to this at some point. Yeah. For now, I would try to do interface translation and these kinds of things. But it's good to have a standard at some point, because then you might have more than a lot of other people. Yeah. Because it will, otherwise you, of course, will have painful scenarios where, oh, this is so specific and so different, and we have to rebuild everything here on this side, and then we bring the information eventually to where we want to go.
It eradicates that agileness that we want to kind of put in place.
Yes, then you do, like, it's like with machine learning, as we were speaking. You have the world of already usable things, and you have custom machine learning, which is complex. And it's also the same, basically we are bringing all the topics back that we had before. It's also the same with SaaS, PaaS, IaaS. Yeah? If you have a SaaS solution, it might be very good and you should use it. If it works, then it's perfect, because you don't have to do anything, in a sense. You're just setting up user accounts.
It's the simplest, like, the cheapest, it's ready to go. I should be able to get max value out of it, right?
And if you need it now, and you would say, in the next 5 years, it will, for my requirements, will be met by this, or they promise at least that they will be met in a certain way, then you should absolutely go for these simpler solutions. The second you go to PaaS or IaaS, which is more or less only a level of management that differs them, but there it's about, I'm building my own. So I'm building a custom solution, in a sense. I'm using kind of, the parts might not be completely custom. They're just, this is, as I mentioned, Databricks, this is Kafka, this is whatever. I'm using certain solutions that are already there and they are well known and so on and so on. But it's one piece of your whole thing. Yeah. So you somehow have to glue this together for yourself. This can be much better for if you're looking for something very specific, because the nice thing is also, if you're coming to a point where you say, I actually want to have this as well, or this chain, or suddenly I want to process these types of data types differently and things like that, you're just adding this and you're fine. Yeah. And so that's what I meant. You could start just with a data lake, bringing your data there. Then you eventually can start with, I'm using a tool to go on the data. Then you eventually can add an event system. Then you can add another thing that alerts something else. But it's kind of in the same chain of things that you're adding things. And this makes it much easier.
I was just having a conversation last week about business models, and a lot of them being SaaS business models for agriculture that we're currently selling to farmers. But we're not there yet with the data and what we're trying to achieve at farm with SaaS models. We might need to go a bit deeper in to allow exactly what you just said in terms of a data lake that is enabling to what we need going forward, right?
Yes. I mean, certainly there are solutions for SaaS that are just saying, but we are also connecting to all of this. Yes. So because theoretically you could just build your system in a platform structure, or even with VMs or something, and then you make a square around it and say, this is my SaaS solution. Yeah, as long as it has an application, then it looks like a SaaS solution.
We've got the issue of farm data ownership in agriculture. So, if we're going to, I'm reading a Cornell paper that was in Time just this week or in February, and it's looking at methane emissions with animal welfare. If we're really going to challenge these things and bring farmers with us, we need to have a farmer-owned system that allows pre- and post-algorithmic processing ownership. And I guess the SaaS models just come out and give insights to to farmers of value to better run their business, rather than kind of looking at this bigger challenge we have in the sector and what the information from these farms and independent businesses can contribute to that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it comes to, of course, and this goes then to the business model. If I or you sell a solution in a sense, and then you say, okay, I'm doing a SaaS solution, which normally I would actually nowadays I would prefer selling a SaaS solution, possibly with extensions and these kinds, or maybe that you sell custom solutions that you can build around this, and say we have a base solution for these and these use cases, and I presume not all of them are machine learning, which would be a little bit much, but you might have normal stuff, yeah, where you get monitoring for certain things, yeah, and these kinds of scenarios. And then you have maybe custom solutions, and then you might want to build in this style where you can just adapt them or add them to your base. Yeah. And of course, and when it comes to business models, then it comes to the point where sell a SaaS solution like Microsoft does, where you have Office and this runs on our server somewhere in a sense, and you're just logging in, or you have a SaaS solution where you say, or a solution where you say, okay, I give you all these blocks that we built in the square, and then you can deploy your square here or here or here. Yeah, then you're basically selling the square in a sense. Yeah. And then you can let them, yeah, this is maybe a little bit proprietary, you shouldn't touch these things, but everything else is yours for the taking, and you can use our interfaces to get data out and these kinds of things. That is a little bit more, I mean, the cleaner solution is typically a SaaS solution, but you have to figure out.
But do you start there? I guess looking at it's not picking or choosing, right, which is you're going to be. You may, you know, it's not like, oh, I'm waking up and being an on-prem system. You might begin as that and end as a SaaS, right? And that's what you've, I guess, the larger model that ultimately can be rolled out and developed too, is the challenge and problem you have to solve might need something specific today, but it may evolve into something different over time that is more widely available.
I would go a little bit from the, when you were talking about what would I put on premise, a little bit on my, more, where I have more control as the consumer in a sense, compared to the cloud, I would put this question a little bit more of what is worthwhile having there technically. So you might have one technically, if you have scenarios that are low latency, if you have farms that are not easily connected to the internet in a sense, or you might have dodgy internet and sometimes you have these connections and so on, what do you want? You should use always the cloud for what is worth, what it's built for in a sense, that you have large scale processing. If we talk about machine learning and these kinds of things, you can store a lot of data and you can do a lot with this data. You might have immediate things like monitoring and these kinds of, or you want to react very fast on something. You might not want to go through the cloud, back from the cloud, and then someone gets a telephone call, let's say like that, yeah, or a message somewhere. And I would rather go on the use cases that we have or that you have in this scenario. What requires low latency? What requires, what happens in failure states? Yeah, as I said, disconnecting from the internet and these kinds of things. What do you want here and what do you want in the cloud? I would see the cloud oftentimes more of a long-running historical data store, processing on this, and possibly if you want to, yeah, if you want to say, oh, I'm just moving 2 hours away from my farm, but I still want to see my farm, you might want to have this in the cloud to make it much easier than just building it yourself on your server. And then what is if your server fails, because then we come into, as I said, and then we come in all these failure states. What is with high availability? Do I need 2 servers on my farm? And then, you know, you should use the cloud and its high availability possibilities to your advantage.
It's the hybrid relationship, right? It's how, if something happens, how do I use the cloud? But if something happens to the cloud, how do I use what I've got on my side as well? And I think that's where in food, animal, agriculture, because of just where farms are, where their geographic locations, where service support people might be, we're going to have a hybrid relationship between them. But again, to my point that farm data ownership is important. The value of data, I was just listening to a ChatGTP podcast this morning, and you know, they were talking about, because the data that's used in these AI training models is now being used in products like ChatGPT, you're going to see potentially sources monetized monetize their data to access the AI that's there, because we're seeing things like Reddit and all these other channels be used, and the content that's there that may, I think the word was it chasing files or chasing data for the specific large data sets that these companies have. Understanding that, I think, too, in our specific use case in food animal agriculture, because the data is of great value, and it's a value to a lot of service suppliers to the farm. So we've got to have some sort of governance there in our system that we deploy to at the farm level.
Yes, so certainly. I mean, this is a whole can of worms, as they say. So the data governance, figuring out, you mentioned now the thing with ChatGPT, because you're getting something that is a little bit disruptive possibly, and you suddenly want to, suddenly other solutions might not be able to be monetized again, you know, at all, yeah, because you have a thing that just sees the internet in a sense. A discussion to have when it comes to data governance, and do you own the data that is coming in there? That is also a discussion, of course, to say, how is our solution built? Is the farmer who's owning the data? Do we have some agreements? Of course, you have, probably the farmer owns the data, so you have to have possibilities to share this information. In a sense, you need to have APIs and interfacing to other solutions if the people so desire. So I would, let's say, everything that you might train on the data, you might not be really able to own, or you might own basically, but let's say the data itself might be owned by someone else officially. So, but it's, yeah, it's a complicated discussion point.
It's one that comes up a lot in our space. You know, before we go on and end, one of the things I'd definitely like you to touch on is, you know, some of the things that you would encourage future digital interested individuals to do, understand, have a mentality around with taking on anything around digital literacy and data science, I guess.
You need to be curious, first of all, but generally, I mean, nowadays, you could say, oh, do I learn this in school? Do I learn this in university? I would say there's a lot of free resources on this planet by now to actually come to a point to have a good understanding on how things work and how structures work. Generally speaking, and I just want to make this point, because it actually doesn't depend on if you're learning data science, if you're learning network design or something like that. One thing I would mention is learn the concepts primarily, and then learn what kind of products are there. Because if you don't understand, you have to understand the concepts behind. Yeah? And they are not that complicated necessarily. Yeah.
The marketing does a good job to make it like that.
Yeah. As I said, we had this example before with, oh, look, this nice column here is called a feature for some reason. Yeah. There might be a reason even. I even don't know the reason for that. But and I've seen this in university as well. I always, if I had a math class or something like that, I always thought none of this is really complicated, but it sounds complicated, because they, and I have the feeling it's like a little bit of an ego of saying, oh, look, I understand this problem weirdly written, and look how good I am because I understand it even if it's weirdly written. Yeah. But in general, even in math and even in other areas, if you kind of understand why this happened, why do we actually got to this point of thinking about this, then it's not super complicated. As an example, what I told you, you have details, of course, that are complicated, yeah, but they are really when you have to build all of this from scratch. Typically, you can buy something where they already hide a lot of these details. But it's good to understand, hey, I have data. What do I do with this? Do I want to do something fast or not? Yeah, and that is what it boils down to. So suddenly you have different systems that are designed more to, oh, I can process data fast. Then you have other fast in the way of how quickly it goes from A to B. And on the other end, you might have things where it's like, oh, I want to process a lot of data fast. Yeah, but the word fast is suddenly not in millisecond, but it's more of some hours or something.
Yeah. It's my monthly report. I can have that done for next week because I want to see this stuff. Yes.
And as I said, this is basically a concept, and this is how I told you my background. I was a hardware engineer, then I was a software engineer. Nothing of this has to do with data engineering. Nothing. Yeah, I didn't even know the word data engineering. I mean, I learned machine learning 10 years ago where no one cared about machine learning. Well, like not 10, my God, the time, 15 years ago. And suddenly, why while I was away, not looking at it, suddenly we have machine learning being a huge thing. By the way, a concept that is from the 50s. Yeah. But suddenly we have some, let's say, power in our computers to handle this. But that's the point in the end. Figure out. And so I started also with having no knowledge. So find someone that has knowledge. It's also good. Yeah. So I actually wrote to random people. And the fun thing with people is most people are very nice. It doesn't matter where you are. So we also randomly met, Daniel and I, and we were talking about these things.
And continue to talk about them.
Yes. To basically, to exchange knowledge. And you will have, and yes, I'm plugging YouTube now, but you will have a lot of different places where you just have fast bits. So what I typically do, and this is the other thing, learn concepts, which you typically don't find in documentation of a certain product necessarily. And the second thing is whatever question you suddenly have, try to find answers to that by looking at short videos, looking at something else, asking someone else, and coming to this point of how do I answer this question? Yeah. And on the way, you might learn other things, which is good. As long as you're, as I said, curious of learning something, you can figure this out eventually. And this I find better than any certifications. I can just learn by heart all the certifications I have. And you haven't understood anything about concepts and structures and why the things are. So the question why is basically what it is in the end. Ask, how does this work really? Yeah, what is happening in the background? Because in the end, for all, let's say, as a last sentence, all the data systems in the world, in the end, it's some kind of hard disk, yeah, that is in a server, and you write some kind of file. Yeah, it's like you're writing a Word document, yeah, but just structured differently. And you have to look, oh yeah, they structure it like this because it's better for writing. Oh, they structure it like this because it's better for reading. And that is the base concept of all of them. Yeah, and the really things that make things complicated in the end is just all of the error states. What if happens if the server breaks? Yeah, that is what makes all of these systems complicated. But let's say the base thing of how it operates in when everything works smoothly, it's none of this is complicated really. As long as you think there's a file, there's a hard disk, there's some processor that does something on this file.
Well, I appreciate you coming and speaking today, Marcel. I think that's a great discussion on this topic for today.
Perfect. Thanks, Daniel, for the invite.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the LiveStack podcast. You can find more information about this episode's topic on the Aggregates website or by following Marcel or myself on LinkedIn. If you would like to hear more about this specific topic or have a question, please reach out to us using the contact section on the Aggregates website or by emailing us at info@aggregates.io. Thank you for listening.